My name is Ron Way. I'm your host here on Author Talk and the Rising Light Media Outlets. Here on Author Talk, we interview some of the most famous spiritual or religious authors in the world. And today, we're going to continue in this tradition with one of my own favorite authors, a man I count as a friend, Dr. Michael White. Today, we're both attending the American Academy of Religion and Society of Biblical Literature in San Antonio, Texas. And it's here that I caught up with Michael and asked him if he would allow me to interview him on a subject I think is critically important to millions of people around the world, and most especially within the Christian churches. The subject is the forbidden word, homosexuality, and most importantly, homosexuality in the Bible. Michael is an American Bible scholar. He holds the Ronald Nelson Smith Chair in Classics and Christian Origins, and he's the director of the Institute of the Study of Antiquity and Christian Origins at the University of Texas at Austin. He attended Abilene Christian University, Yale University, and Yale Divinity School. He's one of the most brilliant scholars that I know, and we're both members of Westar, better known as to the public as the Jesus Seminar, which is where I met he and his wife. He has written several books, among them, From Jesus to Christianity, How Four Generations of Visionaries and Storytellers Created the New Testament and Christian Faith, and Scripting Jesus, the Gospel in Rewrite. Wow, that's a long introduction, but I tell you, these things about Michael so that you will know that the man that is going to walk us through this subject of homosexuality, most frequently referred to as gay in today's world, is well qualified to take us on this journey into the Old and New Testament and the world that created them. Welcome, Michael, to Author Talk. It's great to see you again.
Thanks, Ron. Good to be here.
You can find the word homosexual all over the English version of the Bible, Michael, but you say there is no general word for same-sex relations in the Hebrew Bible, and same-sex relations are not exclusively condemned except in two passages in Leviticus. So how did we get to this point? Even if they didn't use the word homosexual, didn't it mean the same thing?
Well, Ron, I think we have to start with the realization that the term homosexual and homosexuality are actually very modern terms. They were only invented, quite literally invented, at the end of the 19th century and come into English usage at that point in time to describe modern medical phenomena. But we have to recognize that as such, they are really looking at things from a modern perspective, a perspective that didn't exist in the ancient world. So let me start with a quotation from one of my teachers, Wayne Meeks, formerly of Yale University, now retired. And this was from an article he did on the issue of the Bible and homosexuality back in 2004 in the Christian Network Journal. And here's the quotation I want to start with. The category homosexuality is absent from the Bible and generally unknown in antiquity. It is a modern construction and depends upon an understanding of gender that arises only in modern times. Ancient understandings of sex as well as gender are quite varied and all different in some fundamental ways from our own. Therefore, simply to pick out those rather rare places where the Bible mentions or alludes to sexual acts and to assume that they mean the same things that they would mean in our culture will inevitably lead to confusion. So the first point to make is that the terminology that we use today has evolved. It's come about and it has a range of meaning, but neither the terminology was there in the ancient world, nor was the concept. And that's the critical thing. So let me go farther on that for just a moment. Now, as for the term homosexuality, according to the supplement to the Oxford English Dictionary, the word homosexuality was first coined in English in 1892 by Charles G. Chaddock and was later used in that same year by another author, J. A. Symonds. It appears that Chaddock had formed the word as a neologism, in other words, just a new word, to translate an equivalent German term first coined in 1869 and taken over by the famous German medical writer Krafft Ebing, who popularized it in his work Psychopathia Sexualis, published in 1887. Now, at this point in time, the term was being coined by medical writers as a primarily descriptive term from a medical perspective, since it was attempting to render, in more scientific terms, practices that were widely discussed but had no technical scientific jargon to go with them. And specifically, the word they were trying to get rid of, to get away from, was sodomy.
Ah.
So homosexuality came about in 1869 to 90, so not very long ago, a little over 100 years, but primarily to deal with an older term, sodomy. So you might say, oh, well, then that's what they're talking about
exactly.
In the Bible.
Right.
But in fact, the term sodomy didn't exist until the Middle Ages. In fact, not until 1072.
Well, then let's talk about Leviticus and so on. What are they talking about then? Aren't we talking about the same thing, and it's just semantics you're discussing, Doctor?
Well, I don't think it is just semantics, and I don't think it's quite possible, as in the quote from Wayne Meeks that I've already read, suggests, is that the terminology really doesn't operate. The concept isn't there in the ancient world. So if we're going to talk about this, we have to start by talking about something much more basic, and that is same-sex sexual relations.
Right.
And obviously, that could be same-sex relations between men or between women, and that's where the discussion comes in. What we're going to see as we go through this material is same-sex relations between women is hardly ever discussed in the ancient world at all, and never in the Bible. So how can you apply a term like homosexuality, which is supposed to be hyper-descriptive of a whole phenomenon, if half of the people who might be engaged in those kinds of acts are not even discussed?
I know you've got in your brief, because I was reading it, you summarize a few of these statements out of old, and then we'll get to New Testament, with primarily Paul, and then Timothy. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through what it says and how you interpret that then?
Okay, well, let me start by saying it very explicitly. There are a few passages in the Bible that explicitly talk about same-sex relations between men. And the two passages are from Leviticus chapter 18 and Leviticus chapter 20. And those are the only two passages anywhere in the Hebrew Bible that actually discuss same-sex relations. So, yes, there are such statements, but they have to be taken in a bit of context of what they're talking about. But I want to start by this observation. They do not constitute a universal prohibition, only a statement about purity laws within Jewish tradition as it deals to specifics. So let me read the passage and then we'll go from there.
Good.
And I'm reading now from the King James Version. That may be the ones that most people know. And I can talk about the terminology once we do that. So this is Leviticus 18, verse 22. Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination. Neither shalt thou lie with any beast to defile thyself therewith. Neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion. So that's the first passage. The second passage...
And it says confusion.
And it says confusion in the second one, but that's talking about with beasts.
Okay, got it.
Not about...
Men
same
and women.
Sex relations with
okay.
men, between men or between men and women. And then in Leviticus 20, verse 13, if a man also lie with mankind, as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. So
bingo.
Those are the two passages.
Pretty clear.
Well, it's an abomination. But then when we look at the context for this, and even the term abomination as it's used in the Hebrew scriptures, it becomes fairly interesting. So let's start with that. Let's talk about that term abomination.
Okay.
What kind of things are abomination in the Hebrew Bible? Okay, Genesis 46:34, shepherds.
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 Like with sheep.
Yeah. So anybody touches a sheep is an abomination. Proverbs 12:22, lying. So liars, any liar, is exactly the same category of abomination as someone who has sex with another man, a man who has sex with another man.
Wow.
So do we use the terminology that way?
We tend to be a little picky on how we use our words or what we think. We pick them apart, don't we? And use what we want.
And that's what we sometimes call cherry picking.
Yes.
But if we go on, Proverbs 11:1, cheating is an abomination. And there it's talking about business. Isaiah 1:13, burning incense is an abomination. And then in other places in the Hebrew Bible, we do have some things that are a little more serious, like worship of idols or other things that are called abomination. But even shellfish is called an abomination.
That's correct.
So the first point that I want to get at is that, yes, we have this direct statement in Leviticus 18 and 20. It does apply to men having sex with other men, and it's called an abomination. But the term abomination doesn't necessarily carry the weight that people sometimes assume that it does. I would also go a step farther. It's a very worthwhile pointing out that the term that is never applied to same-sex relations between men in the Hebrew Bible is this other term, confusion. And those are two different Hebrew words. The Hebrew word for abomination is toeva, and it's the one mentioned in all these passages I've just talked about. But the term that's translated confusion is tevel. And that term, which is used of sex with animals, which is considered improper mixing, all kinds of things are thought of as wrong with that. But that term is never applied to same-sex relations between men or women.
Really?
Really.
So it's a different level of abomination?
It's a different level of
sin.
Sin, if you want to call it, if you want to think of it in those terms. So in the category, or the, let's call it the hierarchy of purity terms in the Hebrew Bible, abomination, well, you can say it's sort of bad, but it ranges for everything from lying and eating shellfish to certain kinds of sexual acts. But it doesn't reach the threshold of this other term, confusion, which would be applied to things like bestiality, incest, and other things.
So incest would be worse.
Yes. At least in the way the Hebrew Bible calibrates and codifies the sexual legislation that it brings forward.
Then tell me, you have two different Hebrew words. Do the English versions of our Bibles that we use, you know, international, etc., do they discern the difference between those two and what it means?
No, that's one of the problems. And in fact, this is true through the long history of translation of the Hebrew scriptures, is that the terms kind of get mixed up. And so the term that's applied to one of these types of sins in one case may get applied to others later on, both in English, but also even in the Latin, in the medieval Bibles, and so on. And that's where a lot of our problems come in thinking they're all essentially the same level, but they're really not in the ancient Hebrew. And so I think there are some distinctions that the Hebrew Bible is making. So we can begin to think about that. And that's where some of the more recent studies by Hebrew Bible scholars of trying to think about what's going on in these particular passages really helps us understand what was the original historical context and what was going on. Now, here's one way of thinking about it.
All right.
These passages in Leviticus, first of all, what is Leviticus? We have to think about what book this is. And the book of Leviticus, the very name means it's for the Levites or the priestly groups.
The priests, and right, not the rest of them.
Right. So these are primarily regulations about the priestly groups within Israelite society and how they lead the people. And because they're the priests, they're also expected to hold a higher degree of purity, especially when they're performing their priestly rituals in and around, in conjunction with, the temple in Jerusalem. So some of this legislation may derive from that level of purity concern and might not at all apply to every ordinary person within the society at large.
How would that fit in with a woman with menstruation? I mean, that was impure too, wasn't it?
Right. So women,
that would be an abomination, or would be...
It's a kind of impurity, and some of these terms are used. And in fact, one of the terms that does get used is if you touch or have contact with a woman during her menstrual cycle, that would be an abomination. That's
right.
An impurity. So these are the kinds of things, and so there are 2 points.
But not confusion.
But that's not confusion. That's not this other term.
So again, help me out. What are the specific things that confusion are? So the really bad stuff.
It's the really bad stuff in terms of sexual activity. It's things like incest and then bestiality, that is having sex with an animal, and things that, and I don't know very many people who are going to quibble with this. Yes, these
right.
are bad things. Yes, these are things that everybody sort of tends to think are problematic. But we shouldn't assume that the same prohibition is operative for the term abomination. So that's one thing I would observe. The other thing I would suggest is that these regulations are primarily for the priests in the performance of their ritual duties. In other words, it's not entirely clear that they apply all the time even to the priests. And we do know that same-sex relations, especially between men, was very commonplace in the ancient world, all aspects of the ancient world, all parts of the ancient world, including in ancient Israel. And so to suggest that these two passages sort of stand over against that larger cultural tradition that we know existed and put a different stamp on everything is a little bit incongruous to me.
So it's very easy for me to think then the Greeks, because they've known for having their boyfriends, the little boys and young men. That is true also in the Hebrew culture? I mean, I'm blown away by that.
Yes, there are indications that, and in various contexts, men, both men of adult age and younger boys, were involved in sexual activities, especially when captives were taken in war. Sometimes they were taken as sexual slaves. And there, these sorts of things just, I mean, it's not nice, it's not pretty, it's not something we may want to approve of. At the same time, their attitude toward those kinds of sexual practices were very, very different. And so I think we have to remember that these two specific passages in Leviticus have a very limited range of applicability that we need to think about. The other thing I would observe is these two passages in Leviticus are significantly later in coming into the Bible. The book
time
of,
frame?
Book of Leviticus is part of the re-editing of the books of law that occurred in the period after the Babylonian exile. In other words, this legislation didn't exist in the time of David or Solomon, and for hundreds of years until after the Babylonian exile and they came back from Babylon. So we also have to ask the question, are there some issues that are arising after having lived in Babylonian society for some time,
mm-hmm.
and whether that's coloring the picture in some way. So there are lots of factors in terms of just thinking about the ancient cultures and the history that the Israelite people are going through that have to be considered when trying to understand where these passages are actually coming from. And we should not, I think, take them as some overarching dictum about same-sex relations that applies everywhere at all times. The passages are just not doing that.
Wow. This is so informative. And it's so needed to be heard, because people love to quote this stuff out of the Bible without knowing the context, the history, and what it actually means. I mean, I am learning so much. A lot of the arguments against homosexuality run smack up against Paul, where you begin to see it in the New Testament. Is there anything else in the Old that we should know about, or to bring us into a focus or put us in perspective, or should we move on up?
Well, I think we can start talking about the New Testament materials, and we may come back to some of these issues once we've thought about a couple of those things.
Sure.
So if we think about how the tradition relating to matters of same-sex relations that comes out of the Hebrew Bible, how that comes forward into the New Testament period, that's going to be another big issue for us to think about. But I think the one simple point of equation that comes in that tradition is worth noting, and it will set up some of these later discussions. And it's the idea that aberrant sexuality is somehow associated with idolatry. In fact, there's a passage from a book called The Wisdom of Solomon. It shows up in Catholic and Greek Orthodox Bibles. But here's the passage. It's Wisdom of Solomon 14, verse 12. For the idea of making idols was the beginning of fornication, and the invention of them was the corruption of life. And so one of the things that happens in the ancient Jewish tradition is that this idea of the worship of the heathens, that's the way they would have said it, right? That kind of idea. The worship of the heathens is also associated with some sort of deviant sexual practice. And that's where some of these ideas get joined together and even come forward into the New Testament material.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, you can see this is powerful. We're flashing through the Old Testament. And now we're about to talk about the New Testament. And I know many of you are ready to cite quotations from Paul to prove that homosexuality is wrong. But that's going to have to wait until next week. I'm sorry, we're running out of time. This has been an amazing adventure into the Old Testament and homosexuality. And I can't wait for next week. I hope you join us again here on Author Talk and the Rising Light Media. Thank you very, very much, Michael, for being with us today. And we're going to continue this next week.
Thank you, Ron. Look forward to it.
All right, folks, that's it. Tune in next week, same time, same place, and you will hear the New Testament reasons why we have to rethink this whole process. Thank you so much for being with us on Author Talk and the Rising Light Media Network. Until next week, I remain faithfully yours.